Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We've had a lot of good conversation this morning. Hope we'll have a lot of good conversation for the rest of this morning. We've got 1 hour of the show left, so feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106. My old friend Greg is back, and it's good to hear from him. And so I'm talking about slash pines and slash pines that are growing at Point of Pines. He's right, down there in South Mobile County. That great forest that you see at Point of Pines is a slash pine forest. What a beautiful thing it is. What an incredible, beautiful thing it is there. And I'm glad Forever Wild has preserved at least part of it. It is, but it stretches all around the bay by, you know, Heron Bayou and Portersville Bay, this great longleaf forest, great slash pine forest, occasionally broken by live oak strands, and which are, they're kind of shell mounds where all in the old days when there were plenty of oysters, and the oysters would get all broken up, and it would create these beaches that were made out of oyster shell. Really incredible things. And in these old beaches, you see these live oaks take root, and they'll be there too. That's you know, live oaks used to be fairly uncommon. They were not common at all in Mobile. That's something fairly new. But live oaks existed on these strands down on the coast for a long time, particularly on those shellhash beaches. And you'll still see remnants of them. And along with the live oaks are a lot of other weird trees. Weird plants and shrubs and other things. It can be very interesting. But in the zone between those live oaks and the slash pine, some of the most beautiful wildflowers I've ever seen. Just a great area. And here's the little secret. Greg, can I share this? Greg says it's the most beautiful fishing ground that he knows of because of those slash pines. And you know, Greg, I think I think you may be on to something. So, Greg, if you need proof that there's good fishing there, Greg's got it, man. What beautiful pictures of redfish. The spots coming in right now in those bays. Really great fishing. The speckled trout, if we get rid of these, some of these rains will decline that are coming in, some of these heavy rains that keep coming in. I think they're probably going to decline now. We're back into hurricane summer where the rains don't occur every day. I think we're going to start seeing the speckled trout move back in. It's drying out in Birmingham. Drying out in Birmingham, good sign. The speckled trout are going to be moving up too. So great fishing ground, slash pine. Love to talk about that. And listen, I want to also mention that I am sitting here looking at, I don't mean to sound anxious. I don't mean to sound like I really am anxious to be done with the show. I'm not. I'm enjoying every minute of the show. But I'm telling you, I'm looking at a bunch of seed packs here. I got perpetual spinach. I got Swiss chard. Ooh, I got French sorrel. I got mustards. I got kales. I've got a pak choy that I'm going to try. Ooh, I've got my red Russians. I'm going to get the hollyhocks. Listen, it is time to sow seeds, folks. I want to tell you, I'm proud of myself. I've gotten all my broccoli sown. It's all coming up. Some of it is already potted up. I'm not always this good at this, but I did it right this year. I got this stuff coming up. It's ready to go. The collards. You want collards? Sow them now, folks. This is it. I've been telling you. This is the fourth week into this. And I've been telling you every week, but you're running out of time. Get your collards sowed. Get your broccoli sown. It's beginning to be time to sow mustards. It's time to put radishes in the ground. Put them in the ground, folks. Not the little bitty baby radishes. We have to say this all the time. This is not about what they sell at the Winn-Dixie or this is about real stuff. This is about real radishes. This is about the great fall and winter radishes that are so delicious. The great rose radishes and watermelon radishes. The starburst radishes. All of these great, the green radish. Oh, man. What a beautiful thing. The great German beer radishes. This is the season of the year when they do really well. And I love the radish. I love the radish roots. I love the tops. Tops I'm using all the time. The greens are great. What a great time. Sow them in the ground. They're really easy. They're really fun. They're really easy. Pretty soon you're going to have carrots. Sometimes I mix the radishes with the carrots. We can talk about that. It's a little bit of a problem. I'll show you. We'll talk about how to do it if anybody wants to know. So let me just say it's time for planting. If you're still wondering what you can plant, please give me a call, because in a couple of weeks, it's going to be a moot point. It's going to be too late. So let's talk about it this morning. Let's get that stuff. Let's get that stuff planted. So Tony sent me a picture down in down on Fowl River. And let's see if I can find that picture. I can't actually get to it right now. But listen, Tony, that is almost certainly a goose grass that is growing in St. Augustine. He wants to know what to do about it. It's probably goose grass. It's a very common grass. It looks, the shoots on it, I don't see the seed heads, but I'm pretty sure it's goose grass. You're mowing it kind of short, so some of the other things that help me to know that it's, be sure it's goosegrass are hard to see. But I think it's probably goosegrass. Some people call it crabgrass, but it's a little different. This is goosegrass. The good thing about goosegrass is that it's an annual. And so it doesn't, it's not a permanent, it doesn't have to be a permanent threat to your yard. What's going to happen is that it's going to die back and you're going to have a bare patch there. The reason the goosegrass is there is because the St. Augustine was ineffective in that area. It died out in that area. I mean, goosegrass just doesn't compete well with St. Augustine, particularly when your St. Augustine is pretty high and pretty thick and heavy. So my suspicion is that there was some problem there that allowed the goosegrass to come in. What do you do? So if you used a herbicide on the goosegrass, you basically speed up by 2 or 3 months what's going to happen anyway. The goosegrass is going to die out. But what happens is, whether you let it die out in 2 or 3 months or whether you use a herbicide now, you end up with a bare spot. Maybe that's good. I don't know. But what I would suggest is make sure, Tony, as always, you know I'm going to say this, make sure your mowing height is high enough, and I mean really 4 inches if you can manage it, 4 inches high on St. Augustine. It really helps to manage the St. Augustine. If you're the goosegrass, if the St. Augustine dies out because of some issue, because there was a root issue or because the soil is too compacted or some other thing, the goosegrass is kind of good at holding that spot until the St. Augustine can come back in. It's much better than having some other weed like Virginia buttonweed take over that spot, which can make it harder for the St. Augustine to come back in. So I don't worry a lot about goosegrass. And you know, the good thing is Tony, we're all getting older. So we can't see the difference between St. Augustine and goosegrass. So when you mow, it all looks good to me. It all looks good to me. But I wouldn't worry too much about the goosegrass. Make sure the St. Augustine is healthy. And the St. Augustine, being the weed that it is a weed when it's happy. It will grow back into that area where the goosegrass is. And the goosegrass will actually help to keep the soil a little bit open, keep that soil from compacting. And the St. Augustine moves back in. Goosegrass, goosegrass, goosegrass. I said it 3 times, Greg. There it is. So, yes, it's good old goosegrass. It's an annual. Not too big a deal. And I sort of see it as a placeholder until the St. Augustine can move back in. I definitely wouldn't use a herbicide. If you want to pull it up, it's really easy to pull up. Really easy to pull up. And particularly around the edges, it might be a good idea to pull it up, let the St. Augustine have a little more sunlight. But I think the biggest thing is make sure that St. Augustine is healthy. Make sure it has a chance to move in and replace that goosegrass when it dies back this fall, which it will do. And it's not setting seed heads very well because of the way you're mowing. So I'm not too worried about the goosegrass. Okay. So listen, we're running out of this little segment, but I got a lot of other questions on text. You feel free to give me a call. We got a question on pawpaws. Ooh, I'd love to talk about that. And there's lots of other things to talk about. So, we'll be back, but feel free to give us a call. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. Look, we talked about herbicides the first part of this thing, and we talked about pesticides. We need to talk about seeds this hour. We need to make sure you got the right stuff sown, and boy, we get to hear this great Gulf Coast dance. This great Gulf Coast dance.
Attention gardeners, new super summer specials this week at A Bloom Garden Center. Buy one, get one half off on all fruiting plants and trees, and buy one, get one half off on all hydrangeas.
That's buy one, get one half off this week only.
Take advantage of these great offers at A Bloom Garden Center. Sales continue this week through Friday, August 10th. A Bloom, 116 Alverson Road in West Mobile near Schillinger and Old Shell. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5. A Bloom, improving your outdoor living.
As a leader in business, the decisions you make affect every aspect of the company you guide. That's why you need a financial partner who will create every opportunity for growth, expansion, and acquisition. BBVA Compass understands your financial priorities, addressing your cash flow needs, anticipating future challenges, and we deliver local personal service backed by our global brand. Commercial banking from BBVA Compass, creating opportunities. For more information, visit bbvacompass.com/commercial. BBVA Compass is a trade name of Compass Bank, member FDIC.
Since the dawn of time, mankind has sought enlightenment, yearned to know if the earth was round, how fire worked, and why apples fell to the ground. The cave house and quill pen are gone, replaced by three-bedroom homes and cell phones, but we're still curious. That's why a great local newspaper is so important. Lagniappe Weekly is the Mobile area's newspaper, with the stories nobody has the guts or knowledge to report. Lagniappe gets to the bottom of things, providing top-notch journalism every great city deserves. No simple one-inch deep stories here, plus we're locally owned too. 30,000 papers, more than 1,200 distribution locations, and an increased circulation this year to reach even more readers in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Lagniappe, the paper that breaks the big stories with tough, thorough reporting, plus the area's best commentary, cuisine, arts, sports, and business coverage. Pick up your copy at grocery stores, businesses, drugstores, in our iconic hideous pink or regal purple boxes. In the mail for just $1 a week and online at lagniappemobile.com. Lagniappe, something extra for Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, lots of good things. You know, the dance, I didn't give you the name of it, but you know, there are people who've been hearing, and it's good. Greg, thank you for piping up. That was the Bamboula. Can we just talk about the Bamboula? You know, it's one of these things. We've lost contact with our heritage, but in the days when the Gulf Coast, when Mobile was a Caribbean city, and it was once a Caribbean city, we now think of ourselves as a what? our close ties are with Tuscaloosa, not with the Caribbean. But Mobile was once a Caribbean city. And when it was, the Bamboula was the great dance of Mobile. Mobile was famous, apparently, for introducing the Bamboula to the rest of the Caribbean. And it kind of took the Caribbean by storm. This great wild dance, the Bamboula. And Louis Moreau Gottschall, great composer from Louisiana, really wonderful composer from Louisiana, who spent time along the northern Gulf Coast, kind of our northern Gulf Coast composer from the 19th century, recorded these sounds in his head and then wrote a piece called Bambula. And it's one of the, you hear that bass drum, that boom, 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 boom. That's sort of the underlying beat of that Bambula. What a great dance, the great dance of Mobile. Lots of good questions this morning. So let me just address a few of them real quick. Chris in Saraland is asking me about sumac berries. Yeah, the sumac berries are ripe, and the winged sumac, and the tree sumac glabra are both. The berries should be ripening now. They're a nice deep red. And you can, if you know better, listen, sumac berries are one of the principal ingredients in Middle Eastern cuisine. So if you ever eat it at a Lebanese restaurant or at a Turkish restaurant or in any of these Middle Eastern restaurants, Where they're serving a Middle Eastern cuisine, sumac berries are a very important part of the cuisine. They have a bright, lemony, almost a lemony taste, but it's different. It's different, and it's great, and it's really very much a part of that cuisine. And the same thing, you can do the same thing from our native sumacs. And their fruits are doing right now. You can make a great lemonade. Can I talk about the lemonade real quick, Chris? Listen, one thing about the winged sumac lemonade, which is delicious. I love it, and I use it for lots of things besides just drinking straight. There's lots of ways to use it, is don't cook those berries. So what you do is you wash the berries, and you don't have to do too much. Just wash the berries, put them in a pitcher of water. If you want to, you can let it sit in the sun or not sit in the sun, whichever you want to do, and just let them sort of steep there in there. Don't cook the berries. This is not a tea that should be made with hot water, because it releases some unpleasant chemicals that have unpleasant taste. They don't do anything to you. They just don't have a great taste. And so to make the lemonade, you just let them steep in cold water. It's the easiest thing in the world. And it makes this beautifully colored, the juice is just this beautiful red color. It has a great flavor, a great taste. It's so easy. Sumac berries. Wash the berries. You know, I used to try to break them off into little pieces, and I don't even do that anymore. Just take a bunch of the little fascicles the sort of pom-poms of the berries, and just drop them in there. Pour water over it and let it sit for a day or two. It'll be delicious. It'll be wonderful. You can strain the berries out if you want to. I never mind getting a little bit of stuff in there, but you can strain the water into another pitcher if you don't want the berries in there at all. But they're mostly going to sink to the bottom, and you're going to be left with this beautiful, beautiful liquid. Tony, we better get to this goosegrass problem. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Hey, I wanted to let you know, this is the second year I have been mowing really, really high. I mean, sometimes I go to like 4.5 inches. And it's made a big difference in my St. Augustine. We did not get the fungus this year that we've always gotten. And so that's doing a lot better. But what I am wondering about this grass you're calling goosegrass, once it dies out, what can I do to make the St. Augustine take over? Do I need to just kind of dig it up and then put sod down, or what do you think?
Yeah, so here's what I would do, and it's because I'm too lazy to go to a sod farm and buy more sod, and then you have to do, and then it's kind of lumpy and uneven, and I just wouldn't do that. I would depend on the St. Augustine's aggressiveness to take that spot over. So next spring, just before the St. Augustine starts growing, is when I would really go after it. I'd leave the goosegrass in place, just leave it there to hold the soil, and then don't try to pull the goosegrass up, because it's an annual. You see what I'm saying? It's not going to come back.
Right, and last winter it died down, and exactly like you said, it was a big dead top patch.
Yeah, just a big brown patch. But if just to be sure, take your fork, the four-tined garden fork that I talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. Y'all know what I'm talking about out there. Oh, yeah. These are basically four solid tines, and just wiggle it into the ground where that goosegrass is, lean back on it, crack it just a little bit. Greg, tell them how to do it. Greg's in love with this formula. Just crack it just a little bit, and don't make it, don't heave it up too much. Just crack it. You're cracking what's probably a hard pan under there that's making it difficult for grass to grow there. Just do that period throughout that little space, just before the St. Augustine grass really takes off, which is usually about mid-April. And if you could use a little bit of fertilizer there if you wanted to, just to maybe get it to grow into there. But that's when I would do it. That's when I would hit. And just crack that soil. That's probably all you need to do. You could add a little bit of lime to it. That might help. Not sure, but it might help. In your yard, given that you're down there on Fowl River, that might help. But I think that's the best way to do it. And St. Augustine, I mean, it's, you know, I used to get calls from people who said, I have this terrible weed in my yard. He said, it grows over the concrete. It grows over my sidewalk. I don't know what to do about it. And I'd say, well, gosh, send me a picture of it. I can't. And it was St. Augustine grass.
Right. It grows on top of anything. And I wanted to tell you, too, the garden this year, man, we struggled. Our squash and stuff, we really struggled, with bugs and just moisture and everything else. But, boy, we've gotten a good start now. My wife, Sam, she's out planting right now as we speak, a whole new batch of stuff. So we're doing good now.
Yeah, all right, Tony. Well, that's good. You know, it's just the problem is you got to get the St. Augustine back, and getting rid of the goosegrass is easy. There's 15 different ways of doing it. It's just that, you know, you want to do it, you want to time it right so that St. Augustine can really aggressively move in there. And maybe that's this fall too, but I think I'd really time it for April, and if the goosegrass seems to be moving into the St. Augustine, I don't think it will very well, but if it does, you can kind of pull it around the edges and let the St. Augustine grow in. Don't worry about the center, just get the edges, and then next spring, really time it so you can crack that soil. Don't crack it too much. You don't want it too lumpy. Just crack it and let that St. Augustine just come in. Don't turn the soil either. And Tony, you may know this. Don't turn the soil. We just want to crack it, because if you turn it, all the weed seeds come up. Just crack it, and that St. Augustine, boom, it should move in there really fast. Tony, you good?
Spot. Yep. And I thought, you never said goosegrass. I can't remember what you said you thought it might be.
Is this another spot?
No, it's the same area, but it was a different time of year. I don't remember when I sent you the picture.
Well, there was another. What you sent me was a picture of either Eleusine, which is a goosegrass, or it could be a crabgrass, one of the many crabgrass digitaria varieties. Without a seed head, I can't tell really easily.
Right,
but I think it's goosegrass.
Yeah, because the picture I sent last year actually had a little seed head on it. And that's what you immediately said. And it wasn't a grass. I can't remember the name you used.
Well, there's another plant you sent me a picture of last year that's a little different, and it's a tropical weed. And I'm sorry, it's now out of my head which one it was, but I think you had another.
I appreciate it. I think we're headed in the right direction at this point, yeah. So we'll keep you advised.
All right, good, good, good. Hey, I know I got another caller, Charlie. Have I got time for another caller? Yeah, Barbara, I'm listening. What's up?
Barbara, is this the right time to plant tomatoes? And if it is, what do I do? Do I go to the nursery here and get a plant? I don't think I would plant it from seed, would I?
Yeah. So, Barbara, I'm gonna tell it to you straight. I think it's too late for seeds or plants. Now, if you were to get a plant, I would definitely not go from seeds. Here's what I would do. Let me tell you when I think is the best time to start tomatoes from seed for fall. That is probably sometime in July. And you know, maybe early July in some cases is better. Late July may be better in other cases, but you basically are going to need all of August to grow that plant out, okay? So I think you're a little late from seed. If you had a plant that was nice and vigorous and you could find one and it looked pretty healthy, you might try it and you may have enough time to get it up. One of the things that happens, let me tell you what happens in fall. It gets cooler, which is okay. The tomatoes actually tolerate that pretty well. But the one of the things that happens in fall is the days get shorter. And when days get shorter, there's less sunlight. And when there's less sunlight, it's harder for plants that set fruit to set that fruit. So you need to give it a head start.
Well,
I think you'll let me just say real quickly, I think if you were to plant a tomato right now, you'd probably get lots of green tomatoes, and that might be okay. Because, you know, there's nothing. Green tomatoes can be pretty useful, but you're probably not going to get a ripe one.
Well, I'm not from Mobile, so I'm from the Northeast, and that's a total different type of gardening. So where would you go to get a tomato plant? One of the nurseries or Lowe's or just where?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. If tomato plants were available this time of year, it would probably be coming from a source that wasn't very knowledgeable about the right time to plant tomatoes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So,
that makes sense. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know whether A Bloom has tomatoes this time of year for people who would like to try it. I don't know. It sounds like something Home Depot and Lowe's might do because sometimes they don't know any better. And oftentimes they don't know any better, I should say.
Yeah, but tomato that I might look for at Lowe's. I mean, I think they do have plants, but I don't know what type of plant to plant.
You know, I don't know whether they do or not. I would suspect they probably don't. Even Home Depot and Lowe's probably don't have them this time of year. If I were looking for a tomato, I would be looking for a tomato that set fruit as early as possible. So you'd want a tomato that set fruit within 65 days. Rather than a tomato that sets fruit in 85 days. So the old-fashioned heirloom tomatoes are going to take 80 to 90 days to set fruit, and you don't want that. What you want is something like Early Girl or something very, very early to set fruit. And hey, listen, let's talk about tomatoes in a different way at a different time of year. We'll do better. Gotta take a break. Nice song.
Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
This information update brought to you by Truett Insurance and Bonding in Daphne. When you need home, auto, or business insurance, do it with Truett. Call 625-2600 or visit our website, truettinsurance.com. Do it with Truett.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
The Gulf Coast can expect mostly sunny skies today with scattered afternoon thunderstorms. Highs will be near 90 degrees. Tonight, isolated evening thunderstorms, lows in the mid-70s. And for Monday, scattered afternoon thunderstorms with highs around 90. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
Once-in-a-lifetime savings right now at Mike Ward's Liberty Safes. Clearance pricing on selected Colonial and Franklin Liberty models in stock with up to $150 in free accessories. 12-month 0% financing with approved credit and free delivery up to 50 miles. Now's the time to secure your valuables in a Liberty Safe from Mike Ward's. But hurry, these deals won't last forever, and your fire and theft warranty will never run out. That's Mike Ward's Liberty Safes, exit 5B Moffitt at I-65 in Mobile. Just look for the giant yellow safe.
Continue the tradition at Cammie's Old Dutch Ice Cream Shop. Reward good behavior and treat the kids after school. Can't make it to Cammie's? Get some of Cammie's homemade ice cream at Two Sisters Panini in Daphne, Two Sisters Fairhope, Brody's Cream and Bean, Silver Hill, Max Soda Shop in Satsuma, Oakley Pharmacy, Tillman's Corner, Food Champs DIP, and Rainbows on Dolphin Island. After school or anytime is a great time to visit Cammie's Old Dutch Ice Cream Shop on the corner of Florida and Old Shell. 49 years and still dipping. Like us on Facebook.
Fighting the socialists in Washington, exposing the nonsense in Congress, restoring common sense to government. It's Common Sense Radio Town Hall with your host, Pete Rehm. We the people must take a stand.
Please join me, Pete Rehm, 8 p.m. every Thursday night for the Restoring Common Sense Town Hall. Presented by The Call News, delivering news and sports for Mobile County. We'll turn up your voice. That's Common Sense Town Hall, presented by The Call News. Every Thursday at 8 p.m. on FM Talk 106.5.
I am incredibly, incredibly proud to be a physician here at St. Jude. To be in a place where I know my patients are going to get the top-notch care. Not only care, but also research happening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Every single person that contributes is a part of that St. Jude family that makes that happen. Because of everyone that is really committed to the mission of St. Jude, we're giving families hope.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures. Saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
You know, sometime out in the garden and actually start singing that. Listen, we got lots of questions today on text. I got to keep up with all these text questions. I got a bunch of them. Oh man, let me find the first one here. There was a question. Pete sent me a note saying that some of the turf farms over in Foley had invented a machine that does steam treatment of the upper 6 to 12 inches of soil. And it's an interesting idea. You know, we're actually learning that heat can have an effect on a lot of different things in the soil that can be very useful. It's got to be really hot, though, and one of the things that the steam treatment can do is it can control nematodes. So if you're growing centipede grass, that's a great thing because centipede's very susceptible to nematodes. One of the reasons we have such a bad problem with centipede grass. But it controls other diseases as well and controls a lot of the weeds seeds as well. So that's a smart way of dealing with it. It sterilizes the soil, which creates other issues, but it's much better than some of the alternatives. Dan sent me a question about planting a bay tree. Now, Dan, that's a big question because there's a lot of trees that are called bay tree. I need to know what kind of bay tree you want, what you want to do with it. Are you using a bay tree to eat? Are you using it for the bay leaves? Are you using it for the looks? And that depends because there's a bunch of trees we call bay tree. That's one of the problems. Some of them are magnolias, some of them are red bays, some of them are myrtles, wax myrtles. It just depends. So before I answer anything else, Dan, I need to know what it is you're going to do with this tree. So you may have to call me about this one, okay? You may have to call me. I may not be able to answer that by text. Somebody has a short needle pine, 20 years old, approximately 30 feet. Pine cone's about the size of a satsuma. You know, depending on where you are, if the person who asked me about this short needle pine and you're down on the sandy soils down along the coast, I think you may be talking about sand pine because it's got kind of a fat cone that's about the size. So I'm thinking it's not short leaf. I think with that fat cone, it says to me sand pine. I think that's a sand pine. Sand pine is a whole nother discussion. It's a really interesting pine. It's not very common except in those sandy ridge tops. It's not a great lawn tree, is it? It's kind of a problem. It's not long lived, but it's an interesting tree. It's an interesting tree. Sand pine, I think, is what we're talking about. If you live on a sand hill or if you live near the coast, I'm thinking I hit that right with the sand pine. Got a question about growing pawpaws. You know, I have pawpaw trees. They do really well. They form little thickets, little groves. Once you get them established, start them in a container. Keep them kind of happy that first year. Don't try to dig them up. You'll never succeed in digging up a pawpaw. But the problem with pawpaw is pollination to get the fruit. So growing them is not that hard. Getting the fruit is a little bit harder. We actually saw some big groves of pawpaw yesterday walking the hills of Alabama. But getting them pollinated is an interesting problem. The pollinators are things that may not be occurring in your yard, but the first thing you need is two different strains of pawpaw because they need to outcross to produce fruit. So even though you may have multiple stems, if they're all coming from the same root, it's the same plant. You need two different root systems, if you will. You need two different clones that are entirely different to cross-pollinate. The first thing you need. The second thing you need is, if you don't have the pollinators, and pawpaws are an ancient plant. They're one some of the really old plants, and they have a mechanism for pollination that doesn't involve, probably doesn't involve butterflies, probably doesn't involve even moths. It probably involves beetles and other things, because it has a strange odor. You got to have those beetles. I'm not sure which beetles they are, and or whether they're in your yard. So if you don't know if you have those beetles, it might be a good idea to find some beetles on a pawpaw somewhere in the woods. Or you can take a brush, like a little paintbrush, and just stick it into the flower when the flowers emerge, and just put it in another flower. And you could spend 30 minutes doing it, and man, you'd have a bunch of pawpaws. There it is. It's that simple. It really can work very well. When are the berries on wings to be ripe? We got that one. Clint asked me, how do you differentiate between sumac varieties, poisonous versus non-poisonous? Well, Clint, here's the simple thing. It is so simple. There's actually none of them are poisonous, though some have some. Your skin reacts to one variety of sumac, which is poison sumac, but here it's very simple. If it's in a wetland, Clint, if it's in a swamp or a wetland and it's a sumac, don't eat the berries. If it's anywhere else, don't worry. You're set. You're safe. Sumac berries are safe anywhere else. The poison sumac only occurs, and it's not very common. In fact, it's really hard to find in a way. When I find it, I think, ooh, this is a cool place, because it's pretty rare. Poison sumac is pretty rare. But it's only in certain types of swamps, and it's pretty rare in those swamps. So as long as it's a swamp and the soil's wet, yeah, don't eat the berries. If it's anywhere else, if it's on a dry land, if it's a sumac you're seeing along the roadsides, I can guarantee you what you're seeing along a roadside is not poison sumac. It's just the native sumac. Winged sumac is probably the most common, and winged sumac has little wings, what they call little pieces of leaf in between the leaflets. Very easy to distinguish. But Clint, I hope that helps. Just avoid the sumacs in wetlands. They're a different species, entirely different kinds of things. Bunch of questions about pumpkins not doing well. Pumpkins are a tough one here. And you know, a lot of you look like you planted at the right time. But one of the problems with pumpkins is they're a member of a group of squash, if you will, the squash group. They're closely related to squash. That are very susceptible to insects. And down here, squash vine borers and squash bugs and a whole bunch of other things can really affect it. It looks to me like, because they have hollow stems, if those stems can't root in, you're gonna get damage from the squash vine borer. And there's nothing you can do to prevent squash vine borers except to grow hard stem squashes. So I wouldn't, if I were going to enter a pumpkin growing contest, I wouldn't do it in Mobile. If I were looking for really big pumpkins, it's hard to do it here because of our insect problems. However, we grow great pumpkins, and Seminole pumpkins are my favorite. You can actually eat them. They're absolutely delicious. They don't make giant pumpkins, but boy, are they good, and boy, are they cute. I love Seminole pumpkins. I display them at Halloween. Great for display at Halloween. You'll end up with tons of them. And there it is. There's the shortest story. Got a great picture of Alabama red okra from Sean. It is a great okra, and I really want to talk about it. But now I got a lot of other calls. Hey, Sean, remind me next week to talk about Alabama red okra. It's really good. So we got Barbara. Bernadine, is Bernadine still on the phone? Charlie? Yeah, Bernadine, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, my blood orange tree has the leaves that are folding towards the center upwards, and it always looks like it needs water. It's folding lengthwise.
All right, so let me tell you what's happening. These are citrus leaf miners, and they're little bitty, tiny worms. if you'll look where that leaf is all crumpled up, the best way to describe it, the leaf's kind of crumpled up and distorted, right? And if you look, if you turn that over, you'll see underneath it, there's all these little curlicues where this leaf miner has grown all through the leaf, is kind of trailed through the leaf and is eating out, and the leaf responds by crinkling up. Here's the great thing. It always happens this time of year because the leaf miner is already inside the leaf. You can't really do anything about it. There's just nothing you can do about it. But here's the great thing. It doesn't matter except for looks because the leaf is still green. It's still doing photosynthesis. It doesn't have a greatly reduced photosynthetic area, so it really doesn't hurt the tree all that much. The tree tolerates a lot of leaf miner damage. So this is hard to do, but let me go out. Let me tell you that the best thing to do for citrus leaf miner damage is to ignore it. Just get used to it. It's fine. It's not a problem. It looks a little crunchy. It looks a little not pretty, but it only happens one time a year, and your tree is going to be fine. So don't worry too much about it. Oh, man, I can't keep up. And listen, I owe Sean Sullivan peppers, and I didn't bring him any peppers. Man, is he going to be mad at me? Only thing I can say is I'm still working on it, Sean. As soon as I'm going to bring you the peppers, I promise. I promise. You don't have to give me any venison. I'm glad to bring you peppers. Just by the way.
I'm Dr. Brian Heller with Southern Cancer Center. I'm often asked how I got into the field of oncology. In medical school, I wasn't sure what kind of doctor I wanted to be until that first day on a rotation in the cancer ward. I met a young girl with leukemia who had a huge impact on me. After that, I met another cancer patient and then another. I had never before experienced interacting with patients on such a deep level. That's when I knew I wanted to take care of patients with cancer. At Southern Cancer Center, I also want to take care of you. I want to navigate you from patient to survivor.
The Husqvarna Fleet Program is back at Robert Stowe Power Equipment. Husqvarna and Robert Stowe Power Equipment have teamed up to bring you the best deals on commercial zero turns of the season. Listen up, landscapers. Right now, get a Husqvarna commercial zero turn starting at $136 a month for qualified buyers and receive a blower and string trimmer for free. Do you feel like the yard work never ends? Husqvarna's robotic 450X auto mower gives you a better looking lawn with less effort. The auto mower maneuvers around your lawn without supervision, even over tricky terrain and obstacles. It knows when it needs power and directs itself back to the charging station. With convenient control options, the auto mower allows you to set it and forget it, even from your smartphone. Thanks to Husqvarna, you can have a great looking lawn and more time to enjoy it this summer. Visit Robert Stowe Power Equipment today to see how they can help with all your lawn and garden needs. Highway 59 South in Robertsdale, right at the split by the Catholic Church. Or visit them online at robertstowepower.com. Husqvarna, ready when you are.
It's a rapidly emerging trend, and it's especially popular with youth and young adults. The CDC says e-cigarettes are now the most commonly used form of tobacco among the youth in the United States. The sometimes sweet-smelling vapor can seem appealing, but it contains harmful ingredients, including nicotine. Nicotine exposure during adolescence can cause addiction and hinder brain development. It's important that parents and guardians discourage the use of e-cigarettes by their kids and talk to them about the risks.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, listen. I want you to listen. We don't have much time left. I got a bunch of questions and a lot of really good questions this week. Johnny's got a great picture of Maypops. Johnny of passion fruit. Johnny, just remind me next week to talk about passion fruit, please. Jim, man, what a great question about elderberry. I think that elderberry and beautyberry don't go halfway well together. No, I don't think they would go well together, but that may be my prejudice. You should try it, but I'd be cautious. Beautyberry's pretty strong tasting. But let's talk about that next week. I'd love to talk about more. Dan, I finally got a little more information from you. It's a great question. We need to answer some questions about bay trees and how to grow them now. Dan, please let me answer that next week because we're going to run out of time this week. David, beautiful, beautiful pickled gugusa. Beautiful pickled gugusa. David made. If you don't know what gugusa is, you ought to call in next week. It's one of these great treats on the Gulf Coast that David is really doing a great job on. Got a couple of callers. Going to get to them now. Hey, Charlie, who's first up here?
Robert.
Robert, I'm listening. What's up? Thanks for holding on.
I have something that, good morning, by the way.
Yeah.
I have something that showed up in my yard last year, and I've just been watching it. And I think with my Audubon library that I've determined it's a chocolate boneset or a chocolate Joe Pye weed. Can you tell me anything about these things?
Chocolate, you know, I've never heard of it. Do you know, I am completely lost by the chocolate part of it. I've never heard of that. Now, there are many things in this world that I haven't heard of, but I may know it by another name. Do you remember the Latin name? Was it a eupatorium? E-U-P-A-T-O-R-I-U-M?
That is it.
Yeah, so eupatorium's a big genus. There's a lot of different kinds of things in eupatorium. So, and it can drive botanists crazy because some of them look a whole lot alike. So here's Robert. Here's what you need to do. If it's in flower, can you send me a picture of the flower and I can help you out a little more and tell you a little more about it? Because it's a big genus.
Well, it's not flowering at this time, but it's green leaves on the bottom and rusty colored leaves on top. It's about 5 feet tall.
So, man, oh, man, I don't know. When does it flower? Does it flower? It flowers later in fall?
It does. It flowers before the frost, and if it's a little tardy, then it just dies back before it flowers.
Hmm. You know, what we normally call Joe Pye weed is a big dome of flowers, and almost all the Joe Pye weeds I know in South Alabama bloom in July and August, not later in fall. So, you know what? Yeah, maybe you should send me a picture of this plant, because I can tell you really quickly. Send me a picture, and then I'm going to do my best without flowers, and you may have to send me a flower later on, okay?
All right.
And let's figure it out.
I'm just curious about this thing. It's very attractive.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. So, and tell me a little bit when you send me the picture, send it to me next week so that it doesn't get lost in our system, and tell me a little bit about where it's growing, just, you know, what the location is. And I may be able to help you.
I had to cut my fig tree down.
Yeah,
and then
okay.
It popped up.
Yeah, and tell me where you live, sort of. So,
okay, we'll do that.
Yep, all right, good. Good to hear from you. And I've got some bunch of pictures from folks who send me some weeds to identify. I'm not going to have time to do them. We're going to run out of time. Send me those pictures next week. Do we have one more caller, Charlie?
No.
Yeah, okay. So we lost another caller. Let me try to so this is a weed that comes up a lot this time of year. Gripe weed, it's sometimes called. Someone said it looks like the leaves of a mimosa tree. It kind of does. It's gripe weed. It's an annual. It comes up in areas where there's lots of sunlight getting to the soil surface. It loves moisture. It loves coming up this time of year, but it needs sunlight to germinate, and it needs lots of moisture. So a lot of people come in and say, oh, I'll kill that gripe weed. Well, the gripe weed's going to die out anyway. And at this point in the year, it might be just as well to mow it. But you know what's going to happen is all the seeds that it's already set are just going to germinate. It's going to come up next year. Don't try to use a herbicide on it this time of year. This time of year, if you get a little patch of it, just pull it up. It pulls up real quick. Make sure that areas where you do have gripeweed in St. Augustine, it's probably an area where the St. Augustine's having a struggle growing. Make sure you mow high. If you mow high enough, you're not going to have a problem. You're not going to have a big problem with gripeweed. You're just not. The other weed, somebody else sent me a picture of a kind of a weird grassy thing. That's Opilus manus. That's basket grass. It's growing there because it's a shady area, isn't it? Have I got that right? Probably, almost certainly a shady area. There it is. So, you know, we got to think about that. Listen, so one of the other things we didn't talk about, which I hope I have time to finish up talking about, is this beautiful orchid that I got sent a picture of, the orange-fringed orchid. I want to, listen, be sure to send me a question next week. Who was that, John? Send me a picture next week, and let's talk about that orange-fringed orchid. It really is, folks, if you haven't had a chance to go on our website and see the picture of it that John sent in, it is absolutely a stunning orchid. And you think, goodness gracious, that thing just grows wild. And it used to grow wild everywhere, and it doesn't grow wild everywhere anymore. It's just in rare places. And I can tell you why that's happening. It's because of lack of sunlight, and it's because of how we've changed the forest. So we need to talk about that next week, about how to get more of these wildflowers back into our yards, back into the world we live in. Because when you see this picture of that orange-fringed orchid, you're going to say, man, that's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It is absolutely stunningly beautiful. What else do I need to tell you before we sign off this week? Listen, you've heard me do this again and again, but I'm just going to tell you, this is the great season of planting on the Gulf Coast. The butterflies are coming in. They're coming in everywhere. The wildflowers are coming back. It's almost like this time of year, it's like the year is just starting over again. It's amazing. It's like this new spring. It really is. Hurricane summer is the new spring along the Gulf Coast. It's amazing the number of wildflowers. It's amazing the number of butterflies that are coming in. It's amazing how many different seeds you can plant in your garden this time of year and get a great harvest. If you're not familiar with gardening along the Gulf Coast, be sure to start your seeds now for things like broccoli. Hey, folks, this is the last call for broccoli. I'm telling you, if you're going to start it from seeds, you got to do it soon. I don't know whether anybody else is going to have the broccoli ready for you, but I'm telling you, you got to start your broccoli from seed very soon. If you're going to start collards from seed, you got to do it right away. If you're going to start mustard from seed, yeah, it's about time. Kale, man, you got a couple more weeks, but it's about time for kale. Lettuce, you know, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, you got to do that. Radishes, get them in the ground right now. It's a beautiful thing, radishes. It's an absolutely beautiful thing. Parsley. Listen, let me tell you, you can harvest parsley all winter long. You can make incredible pesto. You can make great salads. It's beautiful how easy parsley is during winter here. It's beautiful. This is the time of year to grow it. Start your seeds for parsley now. It takes a while for them to come up. My parsley seeds are coming up, and I got two kinds of parsley this year. I'm kind of excited. One I've never tried before. It's a lot of fun. Parsley needs to be done now. You're frustrated with cilantro? Well, there's a good reason you're frustrated with cilantro. Try it now. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call next week.
Eating beans and making love as long as I am able.